welcome to Building It Up, Not Tearing It Down, A Progressive Approach to Social Security Reform. Today we are joined by John Podesta, President and CEO of the Center for American Progress, who will speak to why this proposal is being issued now and the rationale for a progressive proposal to reform Social Security. Christian Weller, the author of the report, Building It Up, Not Tearing It Down, will explain the specifics of the proposal. And Bob Greenstein will speak to the advantages of acting sooner rather than later to reform Social Security if a sound plan can be adopted. At this point, I will turn it over to John Podesta.
Thank you, Megan. And I want to thank Christian Weller for the doing the bulk of the work on this paper. We've been discussing this here at the Center for some time, and he's done a terrific job. Social Security is arguably the greatest progressive achievement of the last century, embodying the values of shared responsibility and economic security for everyone, not a select few. It's the bedrock for basic income insurance for all Americans. Today, CAP is releasing a proposal that will modernize Social Security to keep its promise for generations to come. Social Security has been targeted in some broad deficit reduction plans. But in our view, Social Security reform is not a deficit reduction tool. Clearly, though, it will be discussed in the upcoming debate about the long-term health of the economy and the long-term health of the federal balance sheet. For example, the Bowles-Simpson and the Bipartisan Commission, the Bowles-Simpson Deficit Reduction Commission and the Bipartisan Deficit Reduction Commission both kind of opened the debate and began and put forward various proposals to begin to change the way Social Security is structured. In our mind, those proposals do too little to guarantee a rock-solid defined benefit for those at the bottom, and they do too much to restrain the benefits and raise taxes on people in the middle. The truth is that in the upcoming decade, Social Security and its progressive foundations do face a fiscal challenge. We've crafted our plan explicitly to ensure the long-term viability of this bedrock social compact. Current projections show Social Security has enough money to provide full benefits until approximately 2037. If nothing's done, those benefits would be cut as much as 24% after 2038. So the longer we wait, and I think Bob will speak to this, the harder it will be to get the right balance in the system. We shouldn't wait till Social Security is in crisis. I mentioned the bipartisan plans to reform Social Security. Of course, the conservatives would go further. For example, the House Budget Committee, Representative Paul Ryan and his budget roadmap would essentially follow the path that President Bush tried to put forward in 2005 and privatize the program and leave workers on their own. Our modernization plan, in contrast, centers around three principles. First, we want to protect and strengthen the basic income guarantees Social Security now offers. Right now, some people live in poverty, even with Social Security benefits. That should change. We propose a minimum benefit guarantee, added survivor benefits, and increased benefits for beneficiaries who are 85 years old or older. Second, we want to modernize benefits in line with the economic and demographic changes that will continue over the coming decades in a progressive way that protects those who need it the most. Our proposal protects existing benefits for the bottom 67% of beneficiaries and increases many benefits for them. We help close the gender gap embedded in the current system that was designed for a single head of household family. We also extend benefits to all legally married same-sex couples. Third, we want to ensure Social Security remains financially viable for the next 75 years through a balanced program of benefit restraint and enhanced Social Security revenue. That's a necessary aspect of modernization. There's no point in improving benefits if we cannot deliver them. In the course of our discussion, there were a number of proposals that we considered and rejected because we believed the burden would fall disproportionately on middle-class families. We rejected raising the retirement age because it disproportionately hurts lower-income workers who have lower life expectancy and who also work in more labor-intensive jobs. We rejected increasing the payroll tax on workers who are still struggling to climb out of the deep recession. Our proposal only includes lifting the cap on employers, and we rejected across-the-board cuts. Instead, our proposal targets benefit changes to those who are better off. I want to reiterate the fiscal challenge facing Social Security is long-term, but if we modernize Social Security now in a progressive way, we can keep Social Security's fundamental promise of basic income security for generations without hurting middle-class families. Now let me turn it to Christian Weller.
Well, thank you very much, John. I would like to follow up on what John just said, and specifically on a need to modernize Social Security and go a little bit more into detail into the proposals that we have. Social Security is a universal basic insurance benefit in case family income disappears because somebody retires, dies prematurely, or becomes disabled. The system has obviously worked very well for the last 75 years, but every so often we have to take stock and ask ourselves if there are things we can do to improve how well this insurance works. And we find that there are a number of demographic and economic trends over the past decade that should be addressed to improve the system. We specifically consider the following trends to inform our proposal. First, old age poverty remains a persistent problem because Social Security does not include an effective minimum benefit that lifts lifelong low-wage earners out of poverty. We consequently propose to create an effective minimum benefit that provides somebody who has worked at the minimum wage for 30 years with a benefit equal to 125% of the poverty line. Second, there is clearly a jump in poverty among the oldest old, typically on age 80 or 85. This happens because people exhaust their other savings over time and then rely just on the basic insurance benefits from Social Security. We hence propose an added benefit for beneficiaries at age 85. Third, widows and widowers can experience substantial cuts in their income, particularly if they're survivors of a dual-earner couple. Social Security still treats single-earner couples as sort of the norm in calculating its benefits, despite the rise in female labor force participation rates. We consequently propose to improve survivorship benefits so that a surviving spouse will receive at least 75% of a couple's combined benefits. Fourth, many divorced spouses have limited earnings records since they stayed off the labor force during their marriage, that they do not qualify for Social Security benefits from their former spouses since they were married for less than 10 years. We propose to gradually phase in benefits for divorced spouses who were married for at least 5 years. Fifth, people face increasing caregiving needs that reduce their income. Social Security, as I said, is a family income insurance program, but it does not offer basic income protection when families have to take care of a family member in need. We consequently propose to add a caregiving benefit to Social Security. Sixth, states are increasing recognizing same-sex marriages, but Social Security currently excludes these married couples from receiving benefits. We propose to treat all married couples equally. Seventh, there has been a growing divergence in life expectancy, with life expectancy rising for high-income earners, but essentially remaining flat for lower-income earners. We consequently propose to slow the growth of the top of benefits for the top third of income earners by gradually phasing in progressive benefit changes. Eighth, wages make up an ever smaller share of the economy as income has shifted to employers, away from employees, and to other forms of compensation. We consequently try to address this in two ways. We propose to eliminate the cap on earnings that are subject to Social Security taxes for the employer share of the payroll tax, and we propose to treat cafeteria benefit plans like 401k plans for the calculation of the employer share of the payroll tax. Next, economic research hasn't stayed still in the past decades, and we propose to incorporate two important insights from modern economics into the design of Social Security. We specifically propose use a better inflation measure to calculate cost of living adjustments after retirement for beneficiaries, and we propose to allow the trust funds to invest a portion of their assets in equity. Modernization will require that we find ways to pay for Social Security's updated structure, as John already pointed out, and our proposal does that. Our proposal, by our calculations, will be financially solvent through for the next 75 years. It's simply a matter of responsible policy design that we make the system financially sustainable for the next two generations. What we end up with is a substantially updated Social Security that protects and improves the benefits for the bottom two-thirds of beneficiaries, that offers everybody higher benefits in inflation-adjusted terms than they get today.
Now we'll hear from Bob Greenstein, the Executive Director of the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities.
Hmm. I do show that his line has disconnected.
Well, we'll try to get him back on the line.
Okay, operator, then now I think we'll go ahead and open up the floor for questions. Just a reminder to everyone that this call is being recorded, and by participating in the call, you consent to being recorded. If you'd like to access the paper right now, it is live and available on www.americanprogress.org. And with that, we are going to open the line.
This is Bob Greenstein.
Okay.
I accidentally got disconnected and got stuck on music hold and couldn't break through. I'm very sorry.
Well, we just announced you, so go ahead, Bob.
Okay. Again, apologies. I'd like to talk briefly about the context for thinking about these plans and then the CAP plan as compared to other recent plans. In terms of the context, it's better to act sooner rather than later, primarily because changes in benefits and taxes should best be phased in over substantial periods of time, and the sooner one starts, the less steep the changes ultimately have to be. But in order to move sooner rather than later, one needs a sound plan. As the Bull-Simpson Commission has said, as John Podesta said just a few minutes ago, the contribution of a Social Security solvency plan to long-term deficit reduction is actually quite modest. That's a benefit, but the main reason is to shore up Social Security itself for the long term. In thinking about how to do that, the other key part of the context, I think, is how modest Social Security benefits are today and how modest the incomes of most beneficiaries are. Today, the average retiree benefit is $1,170 a month. That's only about $14,000 a year. And the average benefit that widows and people with disabilities get is actually lower than that. And a statistic that normally surprises people when they hear it, if you look at the income profile of Social Security beneficiaries, their income when they're beneficiaries, not when they're working, and their total household income, including the income of the spouses, the average income of the middle fifth of beneficiaries, people right in the middle of the beneficiary spectrum, is only $20,600 a year. Most beneficiaries are not affluent seniors who are out on the golf course each day. Moreover, what also often isn't widely understood is that Social Security benefits are actually already eroding over time. One reason is that the increase in the retirement age enacted in 83 is still phasing in, and that's an across-the-board benefit reduction. But that's not the main reason. The main reason is that Social Security checks, as distinguished from Social Security benefits, the checks are the benefit minus your Medicare premium, which is withheld, deducted from the benefit, with only the net reflected in your monthly check. Well, so Medicare premiums rise with health care cost inflation, which is much faster than general inflation. So the amount deducted from your check rises at a faster percentage each year than the overall cost of living adjustment for the check itself. So this means that over time, Social Security benefits replace a steadily smaller share of the earnings that people received before retirement. When you look at things in this context, the Bull-Simpson Commission plan raises particular concerns. It restores solvency by taking two-thirds of the solvency, the financing improvements, from the benefit cut side, a third from revenues in the first 75 years. And by the 75th year, it's four-fifths benefit cuts, only one-fifth revenues. It hits significantly people like elderly widows with incomes as low as $20,000 a year. Now, it doesn't kill those people, but how do you get two-thirds, ultimately four-fifths of the savings from benefit cuts without really severely hitting people at the bottom? The Bull-Simpson plan is so progressive in the benefit changes it makes that ultimately there isn't much difference between the benefit level that people who had modest earnings and only made modest payroll contributions made, and the amounts that people who earned much more and paid much more in payroll tax over their career get back. It means that you would get, over time, people that contribute more would get so little addition for the extra payroll tax they paid that, in my view, it would lead you to a Social Security structure that probably would not be politically sustainable over time. We'd run the risk of destroying the village in order to save it. The Rivlin-Domenici Bipartisan Policy Commission plan is much better. It's about 50-50 benefit reduction and revenue increase. But given all the factors I just mentioned about how modest Social Security benefits are and the incomes of beneficiaries are, I think even that hits too hard, especially when you consider the fact that that plan also has huge increases in the Medicare premiums that are deducted from Social Security checks. A third approach we hear about is one that says no benefit reductions can be discussed at all, no adjustments whatsoever. All of the solvency has to be done on the revenue side. But there's no reason to say that every detail of the current benefit structure is sacrosanct, that no one, even affluent beneficiaries, can get any less. And beyond that, no approach that is all revenue and no benefits is going to go anywhere politically. To my way of thinking, the CAP plan being unveiled today gets this balance significantly better than any of these other plans. It puts everything on the table, benefits and revenues both. But it does not hit the benefit part too hard. Depending on how you do the numbers, it looks like it's about 15 or 20% of the solvency contribution comes on the benefit side. Not 70%, say, as under Bowles-Simpson. As a result of that, it's able to design the benefit changes carefully. It takes more out of the top without flattening the structure so much as to threaten political sustainability. It doesn't whack widows at $15,000 or $20,000 a year. There are different ways to get to that result. I might do a few of the details a little differently, but what we're really talking about here is broad frameworks. And I think the CAP plan is a significant step forward in giving us a different kind of framework with a different kind of mix between benefits and revenues than the other plans that have recently been advanced.
And with that, operator, please open the line for questions or remind folks how they can ask us a question.
In order to ask an audio question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Again, if you would like to ask an audio question, please press star 1. Your first question is from Mal Klein with Accuracy in Academia.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you? Question. Since poor women, according to the Independent Women's Forum, pay like $1 out of $8 in Social Security taxes, what will your plan do for them?
Well, what will the plan do for women? We are improving a number of things that disproportionately will help women. We add, in particular, a new caregiving credit, which will allow women to stay out of the labor force, to take care of, well, take any caregiver, to stay out of the labor force for some time, to take care of a sick family member, a child, an elderly parent, and get paid that during that period. And part of that comes, part of that money is covered by payroll tax. That's one thing. The other part is we're finally fixing in our proposal some of the unfairness that exists with respect to survivorship benefits. We're raising the survivorship benefits for widows and widowers. It's given the demographics, it's typically widows. Those are probably the biggest ones. The same was also true for divorce benefits. The way divorce benefits work these days is you have to have been married for at least 10 years before you qualify. So it's a sort of a cliff. If you have been married for 9 years and 11 months, you don't get anything. We're proposing to phase this in for people who have been married at least 5 years so that they get something if they've been married for at least 5 years and then gradually get up to 10 years. The important thing is that we do not raise the retirement age under a proposal, which would have been a particular hit for lower-income families, lower-income women, and minority women. We just took a very hard look at this and decided that that was the wrong way to go. So I think our proposal generally has a number of issues here that will improve the benefit structure of Social Security, and these improvements tend to go, given the demographics and our economy, tend to go disproportionately to women.
Just to add one more, I think Christian may have mentioned it, but by creating an anti-poverty level benefit, you're affecting all lowest income workers, but I think that's a particularly important issue with respect to women.
Okay, and with that, we'll take the next question.
The next question is from Stephanie Hint with a tax analyst.
My question is, how would the president's plan to reduce payroll taxes affect the sustainability of Social Security and on properly funding the trust fund?
Bob might want to answer this question. My understanding is that they're crediting the trust fund with the reduced revenues, which will have to be paid back with general revenue. The proposal is for 1 year, but clearly I think if the proposal is ongoing, then the source of funds that are being reduced from the reduction of the employee side of the payroll tax would have to be made up with other taxes going into the Social Security Trust Fund over the long haul. Or if you imagine that being a kind of permanent state, you'd end up with a significant shortfall in the overall trust fund. Bob, do you want to?
Yeah, well, John is exactly right. I don't see any problem for Social Security in having a 1 year, 2 percentage point reduction in the employee share of the payroll tax, with the difference made up by a transfer from general revenue to the Social Security Trust Fund to keep the trust fund whole. It would be a concern if this became a permanent feature, as John just said, of the tax code. We don't have enough general revenue going into future decades to keep transferring that kind of money, and that would create a problem for the Social Security Trust Fund. However, there's nothing in the package that the White House and Republican congressional leaders negotiated suggesting that this is intended to be a permanent feature rather than a temporary one. Obviously, Republican leaders want to make the high-income tax cuts and the, in my view, unfortunate estate tax weakening permanent, and they both sides want to make the middle-class part of the Bush tax cuts permanent. But there's nothing to indicate that anyone is thinking of the 2 percentage point payroll tax reduction as anything other than a very temporary stimulus for an economy that's currently very weak. As long as it remains temporary, I don't see any danger for Social Security.
And with that, we will wrap up our call today. If you would like to access the report or the Fast Facts sheet, please go to www.americanprogress.org. Or if you have specific questions for the speakers today, feel free to email me at msmith@americanprogress.org. Thank you so much. And with that, operator, we will end our call today.